You know Rabbi J. Michelson as a regular guest on this program, an author, activist, and journalist who is not afraid to sound the alarm when his work exposes some of the most dangerous developments in our culture and our society. Jay has just published another important story in the Foreword. Jay, welcome back.
My pleasure.
So you wrote a piece called Don't Be Shocked by Jewish Honor for Anti-Gay Pastor Charles Stanley. And the headline is somewhat misleading because this is a major piece about not just homophobia, but it has many other issues involved. Can you tell me a little bit about that piece?
Sure. So, the Jewish National Fund, which is one of the most popular pro-Israel charities, widely supported in the Jewish community, has honored as one of its honorees at the Southeast Regional Awards Center a fairly, hard right-wing Christian Zionist, Charles Stanley, who has said a number of outrageous things about LGBT people. And so there's been a bit of a backlash, particularly among liberal Jews, honoring someone who's said not just the garden variety anti-gay stuff, but really much more extreme statements. And, I took a somewhat different tack in the Foreword because really this is this one honor is emblematic of a whole strategy to get into bed with extremists. Not just, conservative folks, but, really extreme hard-right conservatives who say all kinds of outrageous things. I'm not sure we should be singling out his statements about LGBT folks when he said so much and done so much else that's so problematic.
Tell me about this unholy alliance of end-time evangelical Christians who involve themselves in Israeli issues. First of all, who are they and what are the dangers involved there?
The Christian Zionist world is actually in a lot of flux. The most famous probably Christian Zionist leader is Pastor John Hagee, who's also a very conservative and also parenthetically a very anti-gay figure, who's been honored before by Jewish organizations. His organization is called Christians United for Israel. And this is an organization that has a sort of basic pre-rapture apocalyptic millennialist view of the Middle East, which is that we need to have as many Jews as possible living in the land of Israel. That will hasten the second coming, hasten the rapture, and then the tribulations that follow after the rapture. And, this strand of evangelicalism, obviously it's a little disturbing for many Jews who are told they're going to either have to convert or die in the imminent future when the Messiah comes back. But it's been easy for Jews to laugh it off, because they've said basically, well, contact us when that happens. In the meantime, we'll take the checks and we'll take the political support in the United States. The new wave of Christian Zionists actually are much more, believe it or not, sort of ardent in their desire to convert Jews to Christianity prior to the coming of the rapture. In other words, these are organizations that are rapidly missionizing among Jewish communities. So this particular honor actually is a little more of the old school Christian Zionist, but the landscape is rapidly changing.
Is this a fringe movement within the evangelical Christian support of Israel, or is this something that is really core to part of the reason there is such enthusiasm for Israel right now among the evangelical Christian right?
Among the leaders of the movement, it's not a fringe phenomenon at all. I don't know if we have good data polling ordinary folks who are evangelical and support Israel as to whether they're doing so for some general political reason or because they think this will hasten the coming of the rapture. Christian Zionists like to cite a couple of biblical texts that say, whoever is with Israel, meaning the people of Israel, God will be with. So that general sentiment may be more widespread. But among the leadership, this is garden variety end times beliefs. And I think listeners may be surprised to know that 77% of U.S. evangelicals believe that we're living in the end times right now, that the rapture is going to take place within the next few decades. So it's not a fringe movement at all. It's a widespread belief. And the way it manifests in this part of Israeli politics is actually extremely damaging to Israel, as many of us who care about Israel understand the problem.
How do you view it, specifically as damaging to Israel? I think a lot of Jews are saying, they're crazy, but I don't care about that. What I really want is someone to really love Israel.
That's right. So, there are a lot of ways to love Israel. And the way that the Christians United for Israel are doing it has been by funding Israel's extreme right fringe, so extreme settler movements, the hard right in Israeli politics, and they've really distorted Israeli politics with this enormous infusion of cash and also political support. As someone who does identify as a Zionist and a rabbi and someone who cares about Israel, I think it's a path of national suicide to enrich only the hardest right nationalist fringe of the Israeli public. That, to me, isn't loving Israel, the people, or the country, but rather enriching one small segment of that population. So there's been this huge distortion in Israeli politics thanks to the infusion of American cash and political support.
It's odd because it actually is a very self-serving policy among evangelical Christians, because ultimately it's not about preserving the land of Israel, that, you know, a safe homeland for Jews. It's not ultimately a Zionist principle. It's, you know, it's a very odd distortion that I think, do we have any knowledge of, like, when this started as a cultural phenomenon, as a real force?
Sure. It really began in the 1980s with the ascendancy of the Christian political right. And at the same time as that was taking place in the United States, there's a writer named Rachel Tabachnik who's done some really good research on the Christian Zionist movement. The convergence of the rise of the Christian political right and the rise of the end times following the sort of prophecies in the 1970s and 80s, in which parenthetically, you know, Ronald Reagan said he believed, you know, this kind of mixture of political activism and hastening the coming of the rapture became a potent force. You know, I think at first, even the Israeli right, the sort of moderate Israeli right, Benjamin Netanyahu and others, were a little bit suspicious of the motives of these evangelical supporters of Israel. But, you know, this marriage between the right and Christians United for Israel is now at its 20th anniversary or so. So they've long since accommodated their concerns and are taking the money and support.
In some ways, it pains me as a mainline Christian, because I think originally some of the most ardent efforts of interfaith dialogue and support for Israel actually came from the mainline denominations. And now you see them as somewhat suspect in many Jewish circles because of their questioning of ways of treating Palestinians and Palestinian strategies within Israel. But so I think in some ways they filled the gap. The more hard-right evangelical Christians.
Based on my work inside the Jewish community, I would say that's correct. And we've seen a real polarization. And that's really deeply unfortunate. You know, I was not one who supported the Presbyterian vote to divestment from Israel. I understand there's, you know, reasonable people could disagree about that, certainly. But the reception in the Jewish community is the mainline denominations are abandoning Israel, and the evangelicals are the ones who are exactly, like you said, filling the gap. And, you know, that's going alongside with this incredibly damaging polarization on Israel generally becoming a partisan issue where it never was one before. And I think, you know, when you look at Jewish organizations like the so-called Emergency Committee for Israel, which is actually funded essentially by the Jewish Republican Coalition, you know, the attempt is to use Israel as a wedge issue and make it partisan in order to drive Jews into the arms of the Republican Party. And that's a really cynical political strategy, and it led to just the kind of polarization that you've described.
You make connections in your article between the end-time thinking here in the U.S. among Christians and similar extremist belief in the Middle East. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Part of the challenge in understanding this phenomenon is that it's easy to reduce it to individuals, you know, that this is one anti-gay pastor, for example. And so JNF shouldn't give an award to an anti-gay pastor. And I think, you know, the way the conversation we've been having and what I was trying to say in the piece are saying, you know, this is a much larger issue. And yeah, it's not to say that he's not anti-gay. He is. But this is a much larger pattern about the new extremes, both within American politics and Israeli politics, ideas that you would never have heard just 5 years ago, that, you know, the occupation should go on forever, or that Palestinians should forever be denied citizenship in any country and it should be a permanent occupation. You know, those are now views that you hear in the Israeli government. And making kosher what used to be treif, what used to be not kosher, has come alongside the increased extreme rhetoric on the religious side here in the United States.
But it's also a theological problem, isn't it? I mean, because I think even within ISIS, I think you mentioned that this idea of end times, I mean, what it does to people is it creates this sense of urgency and lack of an obligation of any sort of compromise or any sort of engagement. If this is going to be, you know, resolved in some sort of apocalyptic vision, it's actually bad for me to compromise.
Absolutely. I mean, well, the worst case scenario, and really the worst case scenario, is that a lot of the evangelical end times prophecies and the ISIS end times prophecy are really the same. I mean, that's what's terrifying. It takes two to tango, but if you've got two sides, these things can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, it's really quite remarkable. They both predict an explosive war in the north of Israel and in present-day Syria. You know, the word Armageddon comes from an Israeli city called Megiddo, which is in the north, the northern part of Israel. Even specific political alliances, are sort of predicted in various versions of the ISIS prophecy. The Antichrist is supposed to arise in kind of present-day Iraq. You know, these are interesting theological quibbles, you know, which for me as a scholar of religion is kind of fun to follow. But if you actually think about it turning into a self-fulfilling prophecy, it's absolutely terrifying. And, you know, I think it does lead to a certain kind of lack of compromise, to put it mildly. If we're hurtling toward the end times within just a matter of a decade or two, you know, that doesn't really inspire you to find a reasonable solution so that people can live together in peace and raise their children.
How do we challenge this kind of rhetoric within the Christian community? What would you suggest that ministers like myself and communities do? What do you think the Jewish community should be doing about this? How should they approach this very satisfactory on one sense, but perhaps very devastating alliance that is in place?
So I think all of us who had a more secular vision of Zionism, and I count myself among them, this split among the Zionist community has been there from the very beginning. Shavit's book, My Promised Land, does a wonderful job of distinguishing between what used to be the mainstream Zionist view, that this will be a nation like other nations, and Jews will take their place among the family of nations, and the more messianic, nationalistic, and then religious-inspired view that Israel should be different from any other country and has some sort of eschatological uniqueness to it. You know, all of us who have the more, what I would call the more sane view, should be disturbed by the ascendance of the less sane view. I think we really want to have this questioning, is Christians United for Israel as an organization really for Israel? I think there's been a sort of sheepishness among more moderate Zionists and more moderate Christians as well to kind of say, well, actually, no, wait a minute, that fundamentalism, that's not the way forward for Israel or for Palestine. That's the way to lead to yet another war. Whether it brings the Messiah or not, we may be skeptical about, but that it'll bring a lot of pain and suffering, I think we can be clear about. You know, I think it's difficult to be a zealot for moderation. And after the Presbyterian vote on divestment, it's challenging to find the J Street-oriented two states for two people moderate position and really advocate for it zealously. I just wrote another column in the Forward suggesting that moderate Jews who support Israel strongly should now push for recognition of Palestine. If the Israeli government, funded by American extremists, is not going to seek a two-state solution, then the U.N. should put in the two-state solution, just as they did creating the State of Israel in 1947.
You're saying things that I think many people may think, but not a lot of people say. It comes with costs, and I'm wondering how you have been receiving those costs.
Well, the smartest career move that I ever made was getting out of the professional Jewish community. As you know, Paul, I founded two LGBT Jewish organizations, and those, of course, are dependent on philanthropic dollars, including foundation dollars. And for many years, I really felt conflicted. I wanted to speak my mind or my heart on these issues, but certain of those foundations in particular are now really on a hard right position. So, you know, I'm now in a sort of much more fortunate and much more privileged location, working as an independent journalist and as a writer. I'm now able to be in the community but not dependent on the same sources of funding for my livelihood. The response has been mixed. A lot of folks in J Street in particular, which incidentally, you know, you mentioned what can the Christian clergy do. The J Street would love to have as rich a bench of Christian clergy as APAC and other organizations have. It's a great way to get involved. That community has been, you know, tentatively accepting, interested, just judging on how people have contacted me and also social media. But obviously, anytime there's a questioning of a certain kind of orthodoxy, whether it's on the left or the right, and I've been attacked from both sides, it's best not to read the comments.
Rabbi Jay Michelson is an author, activist, who writes widely on the unfortunate confluence of religion and politics to the detriment of both. He's the author of numerous books, including God vs. Gay, The Religious Case for Equality, Everything is God, The Radical Path of Non-Dual Judaism, and most recently, Evolving Dharma, Meditation, Buddhism, and the Next Generation of Enlightenment. Jay's work is regularly featured in leading publications like The Forward, and you'll find a link to his article, Don't Be Shocked by Jewish Honor for Anti-Gay Pastor Charles Stanley, at stateofbelief.com. Jay, I know we reached you at the airport, so thank you so much for taking the time to be with us once again on State of Belief Radio.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Now, before we go, a couple weeks ago, Welton hosted Interfaith Alliance Executive Director Rabbi Jack Moline on this program, talking about the new Everyone Only campaign. Since then, a growing number of businesses across the country have stepped up to make the unambiguous statement that in the face of divisive rhetoric conflating religious liberty and outright discrimination, they serve everyone. Here's how Jack described the simple steps to taking part in Everyone Only.
Step one, go to www.everyone-only.org. Step two, click on Print the Sign. Step three, take that printed sign to your local business and ask them to post it. Step four, take a picture and send it to us. And those of you who'd like to post your picture to social media using the hashtag Everyone Only will get it greater circulation.
Welton Gaddy will be back next week from a grueling trip to Sri Lanka. May my life be so grueling, but he'll have some valuable insights to share about the state of interfaith relations in that part of the world and conversations he was able to record while half a world away. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to fill in for Welton this week and invite you to make Huffington Post Religion a regular part of your online practice. Thanks for listening. Now here's State of Belief producer Ray Kirstein to wrap up the show and to ask you for your money.
And that's all the time we have for this week's show. We are very grateful that the Reverend Paul Rauschenbusch agreed to fill in for Welton Gaddy on this week's show. Prior to taking his current position as executive religion editor at the Huffington Post, Paul was the associate dean of religious life at the chapel at Princeton University. Paul is also the host of the popular All Together podcast, exploring how ethics, religion, and spiritual practice is informing our personal lives, our communities, and our world. You can listen at Huffington Post Religion on iTunes or at Stitcher Radio. And we want to thank you if you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week. The ongoing financial support of our listeners is essential to keeping the show on the air. If you find value in what you're hearing, please join our other generous supporters today. Visit stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stateofbelief.com is also where you can sign up for our free weekly podcast and find links mentioned during the show. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Share the stories you find compelling with your friends. We really need you to help spread the word. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics here on State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.